You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the Saturday evening, January 25th, live edition of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Keith Alexander in studio with me. Eddie the Bombardier Miller actually already down here at the studio this evening, although he will not be joining us here in the control room for about another hour, and we're going to work all three of us into the show tonight. But I want to start off this evening, before we get down into the news items that have caught our attention this week, and share with everyone my experience in the return to television that I had this week. This is something that, of course, we've been talking about since, I guess, late last summer, when the invitation was first extended to me to appear in this television series, and I couldn't provide much more details to you at the time other than the fact that I had accepted the opportunity and indeed later filmed my part, which occurred in the last week of September, the first week of October. But now the series has begun. The debut episode, the series premiere, occurred on Wednesday of this week. What would that be, about 3 days ago? And we'll continue on through February. I think it's a 5 or 6 week series. And it will be airing, or has been airing, and will continue to air in Europe. It is not an American series. I cannot divulge the details at the time, but it is airing on one of the biggest networks in Europe. It's a Swedish network, SVT, and it covers, of course, all of Sweden. It's the top network over there, and it goes into Scandinavia and, I believe, 15 other different countries, according to the notes that I was given. The name of the series is Jill's Veranda, and it revolves around this Swedish country music superstar. She's come to Nashville now and does some work, but she's the Swedish equivalent, I guess, of a Reba McEntire or a Miranda Lambert, maybe even a Carrie Underwood, a big Swedish star. And so she was in Nashville filming this series, and it basically introduces the Scandinavian audience to country music and other subplots. The basic premise of the show is that it's a documentary series that celebrates country music. Country artist Jill Johnson, according to the website, takes us to Nashville, the home of country music. In the different episodes, Jill and the show will be guested by other famous artists. Each visiting artist brings a country music song to Nashville, and the song serves as the theme of the episode and the starting point for deeper discussions between Jill, her guests, and other participants. That would include yours truly. In addition, the visiting performers will meet American country artists and musicians, and it goes from there. So basically, it introduces Scandinavia, Northern Europe, to what country music is all about and what Southern culture is all about. And each of the different episodes deals with a subplot, whether it be homosexual marriage or race or this, that, or the other. And originally, when I was contacted by the associate producer, it was I was selected. And apparently they had done their research, and I was selected to talk about race in the South. That was going to be my episode. And I looked into this. You know, I decline most interview requests these days. Most of the time, especially if it's local news, a local affiliate, it's just amateur hour all the way. And our judgment and discernment has worked in our favor. We turn down most media requests. That doesn't stop people from writing about us, of course, or talking about us. They're always free to do that. But the interviews that we have selected to participate in have normally turned out quite well. I mean, you'll think back to the CNN interviews that I had. I was treated like, you know, absolutely with respect and dignity by the CNN staff and crew, not necessarily by the other invited guests on air. But CNN was a first-rate production, and I would rate my experience with SVT on par with the treatment I received from CNN. They selected me above all others. And that tells me, that told me right from the get-go that they were serious. If they wanted someone to talk about race or taboo issues, they could have either gone to the depths of the sewer and got a caricature, or they could have hired an actor that would have come on to just speak poorly and about our issues, or they could have just gone to a mainstream conservative who would have given them all the politically correct answers they could have stood. But they didn't. They came to me, and so I looked a little bit deeper into the production company, and it's this television series, Jill's Veranda for SVT, is produced by iWorks, which is the largest television company in Sweden, and iWorks International is the third largest independent production company in the world. It's represented, as I mentioned, in 15 different countries on four continents, and they are the people behind this. First-rate crew decided to participate in it. I was told that my part would be an involved part, which means that it would be more than just, you know, a quick man on the street, uncredited little clip, and that I would be a feature focus in one episode. And so I went up there with that being the understanding. And I got to Nashville, just to cut to the chase, I want to tell you some of the things that they asked me and exactly what I experienced there while in Nashville, and then we're going to get to our program itself. But it's been, you know, several months coming that I would have the opportunity to talk to you about this. I couldn't talk about it until the series began to air, and air it did, and I was in that debut episode. I'm going to talk about that. But went up to Nashville the last week of September, first week of October, was there for a couple of days. We got, I think, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours, it seemed, of them interviewing me. And it was just a great experience. The young lady who cast me in this, her name was Ashley, and she was just a sweet young girl, very accommodating. Yes, sir, no, sir. It was just, you know, the royal treatment. Got up there, and the producers of this thing, one gentleman in particular by the name of Per Dahlberg, is a, you wouldn't know him here, but he's a big name in Sweden and in the entertainment industry, and he was the guy, along with the photographer and some of the other folks that were there with me on the day of the shooting. Listen, I don't know if they agreed with me or not. I don't know what their politics were, but we got along absolutely wonderfully. And even all of that doesn't mean that the way you'll be represented on air is going to be endearing or favorable. Because, you know, what the field producers might want could conflict with what the executive producers in Europe want. But these guys were great. We had a good time. We went around. It was really incredible. Walking around Nashville, we did a lot of different scenes and taped a lot of different parts of the interview at different settings. I remember walking into a coffee shop in downtown Nashville in the entertainment district. And so you got this, you know, film crew behind me, and I'm walking around doing my thing, and, you know, everybody just stops and watches because you don't see that very often. You see a guy and a camera crew following him and assistants walking around. We had a little entourage there, and it was truly the celebrity treatment. I mean, certainly these people, I won't be so arrogant as to believe that the political cesspool is so big, as big as it is, that it's radio, not television, that everybody in Nashville knew who I was. But you would have thought that from the reaction. Everybody just stops and gawks and takes pictures because there's a camera on a guy. They might not know who you are, but they know you're somebody, and they know you're filming something for television. And it was just very interesting to see the way the general public reacted when this was being shot. They couldn't necessarily hear what we were saying or what we were talking about. But I'm going to tell you all about it. I'm going to tell you the exact questions I was asked and how I answered them, and what I saw during that first episode, and how you can watch it going forward. Stay tuned. We're going to get to that, and then we're going to get to work tonight. Here.
When camping overnight, your tent is one of the most important items you'll have with you. That's why it's vital to have a quality tent that is easy to carry and will withstand the elements. Teton Sports offers top quality tents for any of your camping needs. The Outfitter XXL cot tent weighs only 4 pounds, but provides plenty of space for a comfortable night's sleep. Teton Sports also has a 6-man tent, which weighs only 14 pounds for camping overnight with friends and family. Each tent is easy to assemble and is easily transportable, and each is made with 1200mm coated polyester, providing strong and durable protection from weather and cold. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, backpacks, duffels, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Wherever your outdoor adventures take you, you will be safe and comfortable in a quality tent from Teton Sports. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Would you like being an insider? Would you like getting exclusive access to prizes and better deals? Would you like some help in making sure you and your loved ones are prepared for the next disaster or emergency? If you answered yes to any of these, here's your simple solution. Join Freeze Dry Guy's Survival Insider Club. Not only is your membership free, you get $10 in survival bucks just for signing up. Then you save at least 10% on purchases, plus enjoy insider access to specials, prizes, and other exclusive offers. Since 1970, veteran-owned Freeze Dry Guy has been your trusted source for long-lasting, easy-to-make freeze-dried food and dehydrated food, perfect for emergency preparedness, RV travel, and outdoor needs from camping to sailing. Enjoy life as a survival insider. Call Freeze Dry Guy now at 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD, or log on to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com.
Are you familiar with the term vigor? Strength in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example. Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test, available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number's 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. Excited to finally be able to tell you some of the behind-the-scenes moments and give you the inside scoop of my experience late last year in filming this major big-budget television series, or playing a part in it at least, that's airing now in Northern Europe. And, you know, of course we would want the instant gratification of being able to turn on an American cable channel and watch it. But to know that millions, literally millions, I mean, folks, try to understand how big this network is that we're on over there. Millions of people are going to be watching this. And there are European cousins, and they need the truth as well. And so I was cast to be in this. It mainly revolves around country music and Southern culture, but as I said, it gets each individual episode gets into a deeper subplot, whether it be race or homosexual marriage, so on and so forth. And I had the opportunity to go up, and let me tell you some of the questions that they asked. Again, I could not have had a finer experience with the staff and crew, the producers, a lot of people that I met in the course of doing this and talked to. But I knew they were going to be asking me primarily about race. They said they wanted someone that could articulate a politically incorrect point of view on these issues and could do a good job. And so they came to me, and I think they made a damn fine choice, if I do say so myself. And so when you get the opportunity to do something like this, there's two ways you can answer their questions. You can answer it too hot or too emotionally, or you can give them answers that have a chance to be well received by brainwashed but potentially convertible Europeans. And that's what we're looking for. You know, you understand the venue. It's commercial television. Of course, that's fine with us because we've been on mainstream radio for 10 years. It's really the same thing. But you don't want to be too sensational. You've got to give it to them in doses that they might be able to swallow without, and here's the key, in the fine line that you walk in these sorts of situations, without compromising your principles. You want to be able to hold the line, but also give it to them in a dose that they can take. And so that was the mindset that I went into as I prepared to answer these questions. And I can remember waking up the morning. I was in a very fine hotel in Nashville the night before the taping. And we were together all day, again, 6 or 7 hours of footage. I mean, raw footage of me talking to them in different settings. And, you know, they would ask me one question and maybe I would be driving down the interstate. They'd ask me another question. Maybe I'm standing by the river. They ask me another question as I'm, you know, drinking a cup of coffee in a coffee bar with everybody looking around. If you've seen reality television, you know how they do these things. You don't just sit there in a chair and answer questions. You're doing something. You're walking down the street or crossing, you know, at a red light, something like that. While as you talk to give, let there be some sort of a contrast or something to look at in the background. And so that's how we were doing it. As we answered each of these different questions I was asked, I would be somewhere different, but. One of the things I was asked is, do I think segregation is a good thing? So how do you answer that question? You know, you're going out to millions of people that don't know who you are. How do you answer that question in a way that, you know, accentuates what you believe in, but doesn't, you don't fall on your sword? I said that, let's be consistent and look at the whole picture here. Segregation isn't preferable, but it makes the most of a bad situation. Separating into separate countries would be better than segregation, but staying in the countries of your origin is the best. Race relations can be summed up in one word, and that word is conflict. And it's very healthy and natural to want to be with your own kind. Of course, listeners of the Political Cesspool can kind of get where I'm going with this, because I've said it so many times over the years, but people who share common values, common culture, similar heroes and holidays, a same religion, it's natural to prefer your own family. And that's how I answered that question. Another question I was asked was, what do I love about America? Now, this was actually probably the toughest question I was asked of the whole time, because it's hard to think about what I love about America as it exists today. But I answered it honestly, and I said that America at its zenith was a continuation of 3,000 years of European civilization. It's the land that my ancestors chose to come to. It's the land of my fathers and my grandfathers. And there's much to love about America, but there is a difference, of course, between a country and a nation. A country is a plot of land. A nation is bound by blood and soil. And so certainly I love my nation more than my country. But it would be nice if all of that could be congruent. I was also asked, of course, the million-dollar question. They knew I had a daughter. They did their research on me. I did my research on them. They asked what would be my reaction if my daughter married a black person. And again, this comes to be, you know, you really have to choose your answer carefully here. You got to consider your audience, but you also don't want to play softball. You want to be able to hold the line without compromising an opportunity to reach millions of people. You don't want to just turn them off. I mean, your gut reaction would just be to blow a top and get reactionary to a question like that, because you all know how decent people feel about that question. But what I said was that I would be extremely disappointed if that ever happened. It would be a repudiation of her family, and the way I see it, a crime against diversity. Now, see, that's something that politically correct people can relate to, and it doesn't compromise our position one bit. It would be a crime against diversity to homogenize everyone. I love choice. I love diversity. Racial integrity, as we run in the commercials, is God's natural order. You know, the white population of humanity is 10% of the global population and falling. You know, we are hurtling towards extinction. If we were an obscure species of plant or animal, we would have advocacy groups looking after our well-being. But because we are, you know, white humans, we don't. And I think that that's wrong. And I think that to intermarry is to go against God's natural order. It's to hasten our extinction, and I'm against that. Again, it's a crime against diversity. And, of course, I answered that in a very refined way, but those were basically the thoughts. They asked me my thoughts on the Southern culture and the Confederate flag. I said the Confederate flag is a chief symbol of a unique, distinct culture of people, my people. And I talked about the history of the Confederacy, and my grandfather died for that flag. It's in my blood. It gives me chills to hear Dixie being played. It was truly a cause worth dying for. The Confederate flag is a flag that forever flies against tyranny. That's what I said. They asked me a follow-up question about Southern culture and what Southern culture means to me. And, of course, I talked about good manners, good music, a long memory of right and wrongs. And I said, even though we lost our war for independence, there is still a sense of being at home that you find when you're in the South. I can drive from Richmond, Virginia to Corpus Christi, Texas, and I can still feel as though I'm at home. I'm with my people. I'm with my kind. And, of course, having a distinct culture, a culture that's different from those of New England or the Northwest, you know, is a prerequisite for nationhood. And certainly there is still, even though it's been watered down considerably, still a distinct Southern culture that exists here and nowhere else. What do I think about country music? Is it just for white people? And why are there no black people in country music, or not many of them? And I said, you know, there may be a place for blacks in country music, but the fact of the matter is they don't like country music. Country music deals with a 40-hour work week. It deals with family life and an elevation of the fairer sex. Rap glorifies gangs and blames whites for everything. It calls females whores. It deals with drugs and violence. And they gravitate towards that message and a deep drum beat, you know, a primal drum beat, more than they do with the kind of sound that country music, the sound and message country music has. Music reflects our culture. Culture reflects its soul. Therefore, music reflects our soul, and that's not their soul. It's ours. It can't be theirs. They don't relate to it. And that's how I answered that question. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about this when we come back, and I'm going to wrap it up quickly in the next segment. We're going to go to Keith Alexander.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who bleeds the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks, I hope you are enjoying listening to me talk about the experience I had in filming this European television series. It's a big-budget, high-profile series. It's certainly not self-patting on the back that I'm doing here. I share these things with you in detail because, folks, you made it happen. You know, anything that we do that advances the chains for our cause and any accomplishments that the Political Cesspool radio program garners are your accomplishments. Those who contribute to the show, those who pray for us. This is, you know, I'm doing this to show you what you have allowed to occur. And so folks, I say this really so you can get all of the praise that there should be for a wonderful opportunity that I was able to experience. And I remember waking up that morning, the morning before the taping, and I woke up early, right? This is going to sound like it came out of a movie or perhaps that I'm trying to ham it up a little bit, but this was honestly what happened. I woke up early, not out of nervousness, but because I was excited to have this chance to go out and do the job that so few people are willing to do, and that's still the truth about taboo issues. And I pulled open the curtains of the hotel, and the sun was just beginning to break. And we were getting an early start that morning anyway, and we were going to be filming for most of the day, my part. And I remember just bowing my head, and I prayed. I just prayed that God would give me the peace and the patience to have the presence of mind to collect my thoughts when on the spot and deliver a passionate but forceful and cerebral defense of our people when asked these questions, because you just don't see it in many places. And I'll tell you, and I believe I've shared this much with you before, it really felt as though that I was possessed that day. I don't think that the answers ever came to me as quickly and as clearly as they did that day. It felt as though there was a supernatural force about me, and I really felt as though that I delivered one of the most articulate performance. I almost felt like Keith Alexander for a day, in other words, but I thought I did quite well, and I represented our people well. They asked me about Nathan Bedford Forrest, and I answered, you know, for starters, one of the greatest Americans to have ever lived, a personal hero of mine. Now, if I had said no more than that, you know, again, this is old hand to the political cesspool. For those of you who have listened to us for years, well, of course you would say that. Well, no, listen now. Imagine you're watching this show and you didn't know who I was, and you heard a man answer that question that way. The only answer acceptable for that question is he was an evil racist, you know, and then there's the truth. And I gave the truth. Now, you don't know me, but you know the truth about Forrest, and you hear someone answer the question that way, you stop dead in your tracks. Well, hopefully I had that effect on people. Or will have that effect on people if that question is aired. I answered about Nathan Bedford Forrest, one of the great personal heroes of mine, one of the greatest Americans who ever lived. I talked about his history, becoming a self-made millionaire despite no formal education, despite being exempt from service in war. He enlisted as a soldier of the lowest rank and without any military training, rose up to become one of the greatest generals ever in warfare, whose tactics are still studied today. Talked about all that. They asked me about homosexuality. I gave them the answer that I give here on this show. I reject it as a Christian on moral grounds, but even if you don't share my faith, it is a biological dead end. The American Psychiatric Association rightly listed it as a mental disorder until the late 70s, and I said that, of course, it still is a mental disorder, although no longer an officially listed one, because political correctness took care of that. But it further depresses the white birth rate, for one. It's unnatural. And if extrapolated to logical conclusion, it's going to be the end of humanity. So, you know, homosexuality obviously is not the greatest point of Western civilization. It's just something that we should shun, and it's something that should not be encouraged or promoted. It's perverted. It's perverted. I talked a little bit more about race because they wanted to circle back that to that. And I said, of course, that the race that produced Thomas Edison and Ludwig von Beethoven is a race worth preserving. We've heard the grievances about what whites have done. But what about the gratitude for all whites have done in terms of technological advancements and medicine and travel and inventions and scientific technology, on and on and on and on. And I talked about that. So here's the thing, folks. So that was pretty much the gist of it. I was asked a variety of questions, those that I mentioned and then a few others. Those, to the best of my recollection, were the answers that I gave. And I want to thank a listener in Florida. He knows who he is. I'm not going to mention him by name, but he and I brainstormed about this for a while along. Keith obviously helped and Sam Dixon. And these were the answers that I gave. Now, you're talking about six or seven hours of raw footage of me talking in different scenarios, answering questions with different backgrounds, walking around, driving, standing, doing this, that, or the other. 7 hours worth of raw footage. I don't know how much of that is going to make it onto the show. I don't know how much of that is going to be left on the cutting room floor. I don't know if they will try to cut and paste things together to make me look bad. But I will tell you this. I was featured in the first episode for about a minute. Now, it was an hour-long premiere episode. I was in it for roughly a minute. It was very, very favorable. They had me talking about country music and is it for black people and why are there no black people in country music? I gave you the answer I gave, and it was almost verbatim what I told you on here on the radio tonight is what was aired. I was portrayed very, very fairly in that episode. Now, when we got back to the hotel that night, the producers were saying that as a result of the answers that they heard me give, that they were thinking about changing up my role in the series, and instead of being featured in a single episode at greater length, they were thinking about sprinkling me in throughout the entire series. Whether or not that happens, I don't know. Only one episode is down. I was in it for a minute, but I was in it and portrayed well. I had a credited role in that episode. They listed me as James Edwards and listed me as a talk radio host, which is exactly what I am. And you would be amazed, despite only being on that particular episode for a minute, roughly a minute, they made me look good, and they took everything exactly as it was spoken. They had my name spelled and my title spelled out properly. Everything was as it should be, roughly a minute. Now, keep in mind there were millions of people watching. Granted, you would be surprised at how many emails I got from Sweden this week just from being featured on that one episode for a minute. And the floodgates were opened, and many of them were just curious people wanting to learn more about the show or to say just basically that they had seen me on the program and came to the website and wanted to say hello, things like that. Of course, there were some people who didn't like what I had to say, as polished as it was delivered, and that's to be expected. And other people who said, my goodness, this is great. I can't believe people still talk like that. That's how I feel. Sweden, actually, we have a big following in Sweden. Outside of Canada and Great Britain, I would say that, or the United Kingdom, rather, I would say that Sweden is probably number three in the list of countries behind America that listens to the show. We have a large Swedish following. In fact, partly as a result of this, of my appearance in this television program, I'm going to be on a Swedish radio show here in a few days, and I'll tell you more about that. So our profile continues to rise in Sweden. And as I was leaving the taping that day, and the producers were telling me that they were considering using me a little bit in each episode rather than just one episode. And I hope that that's the case because I was only featured for a minute. Now, that might be the only minute I make it on this TV show. If it's not, I'll keep you posted. But they said it was just such a breath of fresh air to have people who honestly believe in what they're saying and willing to talk about it candidly. They said they ran into hundreds of people who would talk this way off the air, but would not dare mention it on the air. And they would say there were people that say, well, when asked about race, he said he couldn't count how many people that would say, well, there's black people and then there's the N-word. And we laughed about that, and I said, yeah, I know a lot of people feel that way. You know, that's, you'll find that a lot But, you know, speaking of that word, you know, I don't think, you know, as I said, it is crude. It's not one that I use, but it, no one should be fired for saying it. And we got into another topic about that. And I said, you know, the Paula Deen scenario, especially when you take into consideration how much black people themselves love it, as they refer to each other as that incessantly. And he said, would you mind saying that on the air? You know, would you mind if we taped you saying that? I said, sure. And, you know, I said it. And he said, no, you know, will you say the word on the, and I said, yes, I'll say it if that's what you want me to do. And I said, people should not be fired for, or you know, be subjected, I think I said, to financial terrorism for saying the N word. Now, they could edit that out and just have me saying that, but I don't think that's the way it's going to go. That's not the way European media works. You know, here in America, American media sees it as their job to enforce political correctness and objective reporting. It's completely passe. In Europe, you get a fair shake, and I certainly experienced it with them. Folks, we're going to come back with Keith Alexander and Peter Scoop Stanton right after this. We're going to get on with the show. We got a lot to talk about.
We fought. We learned. We struggled.
We won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, so there you have it, folks. That was, in a nutshell, my experience with taping this television series. I've been waiting for, I don't know what, 3 or 4 months now to be able to tell you all about it. Had to wait until it started to air before I could. And there you have it. I was treated with the utmost respect and civility by the producers, treated like a total gentleman. Whether they agreed with me or not, that was never known. But we had a great time together, a great rapport. We talked about our families. And, you know, they gave me the opportunity we'll see how great of an opportunity they gave me, but at least I was in the first episode. And obviously already getting the email response from those who watched it. But this is what it's all about. It's about, you know, doing what we do here, building our own media with this radio program, which is obviously growing in popularity each and every week. But having this opportunity to go out and reach millions of people, it will cause many of them to stop and at least think. And many more of them will come over and become converts. They will become listeners of this show, and that's what it's all about. You take opportunities, you weigh the opportunities that are presented to you. If you think it's one worth taking, you take it, and our judgment has been pretty good on these things. We've turned down interviews that turned out to be the right decision. We've granted interviews that turned out to be the right decision. And anytime you have the opportunity to get something this big and to have an audience of that size, which is certainly greater than our own here on the radio show when you're talking about millions of people, well, then you do your best you can, and I think we did well. And you did well, folks, because you made it happen. Let's go to Peter Scoop Stanton. Let's get back into the show now. From this point forward, we're going to be talking about news and issues and stories of the week that have caught our attention. We're going to get Keith Alexander integrated in here and Peter Scoop Stanton as well, who is called in now to start the dissection of the news in earnest. Scoop, what do you have for us tonight?
Good evening, James. Good evening, Cesspool family. I'd like to say that was probably the best 45 minutes of radio I've heard in a long, long time.
But you got to be pulling my chain, Scoop.
Right. But let's But one person who probably won't be watching you on television is New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
No, not at all. This is Keith. Carry on, Scoop. Tell us why Andrew Cuomo is not a fan of James Edwards.
Well, Governor Cuomo was on WCNY Radio up in Albany, which is a public radio station, and he made some statements concerning conservative New Yorkers. Here's what he said, quote, "Who are they? Are they these extreme conservatives who are right to life, pro-assault weapon, anti-gay? Is that who they are? Because if that's who they are, and if they are the extreme conservatives, they have no place in the state of New York, because that's not who New Yorkers are."
And well, celebrate diversity, right, Scoop?
Right.
Go ahead.
Let me explain something to Governor Cuomo, who is the spawn of Il Supremo, Mario Cuomo. First of all, these people have the right to think that the way they do. Secondly, these people that Governor Cuomo dislike are educated, hardworking, tax-paying, God-fearing, church-going volunteers that volunteer for the local fire and ambulance corps, church, youth sports, and also they do not provide this wonderful social services that the state of New York is known for. And anyways, the governor and all his predecessors and the state assembly and the state senate pushed all the so-called extreme conservatives, who are also entrepreneurs, right out of New York. Some of the companies that left or just shed its workforce to almost zero is General Electric, United Silversmiths, General Motors, Kodak, Xerox, Miller Brewing, Nestle, Carrier Air, IBM, and Remington Arms. They are packing their boxes and just waiting for a state like Texas, Tennessee, or Arizona to say, come on down, we'll give you a great tax break. So the end result was 3.4 million people left the Empire State in 10 years. I also happen to be one of them. And that's why New York State is in the same dilemma as Illinois and California, because they just love to tax suspend all the well-educated people right out of the state. The state of New York has some of the best educational institutions around, including Cornell, Colgate, Hamilton, New York University, Fordham, and my alma mater, Manhattan College. But as soon as these people graduate, since all those companies I previously mentioned left town, they are out the door themselves. So, Governor Cuomo, if you want to rid of all New Yorkers of these extreme conservatives, keep doing what you're doing, because they'll be leaving eventually.
Well, Scoop, this is Keith. I think that if he manages to rid New York of all extreme conservatives, he's going to rid New York of anyone with a modicum of common sense, and furthermore, anyone that has an ability to earn money and to be a productive contributing member of society. We appreciate that comment, but you know what that shows me? It's a there is going to be and has been a brain drain and a energy drain of productive people from blue state America generally into red state America. The problem is, for example, there are a lot of Californians that have moved into Colorado and places like that. Unfortunately, these people aren't prescient enough to realize that their politics are the reason that their home state is in decline. So consequently, just like you were talking about, somebody like you, New Yorker, comes down to Virginia. A lot of New Yorkers, of course, Peter, you're not one of them, bring their liberal politics with them. And so consequently, Virginia has been transformed from a solidly red state to what they call a purple state. Ditto for Colorado with all these expatriate Californians coming over. Unfortunately, they forgot to check their politics at the state line when they left California. So, you know, this is a problem. We've got to raise the awareness of people and let them figure out the cause and effect between what they find disappointing or unacceptable in their home state and what, you know, in the new state they're going to made it prosper. And I think it's the difference in outlook between red state America and blue state America, which, as we've pointed out ad nauseum on this program, is the difference. Basically, that's the same difference as between the Confederacy and the Union back in 1861. It has been a constant feature of American political life since 1824 and the end of the so-called era of good feelings, when America basically divided along a kind of folkways fault line between the Scots, Irish, and Irish immigrants on one hand, which became red state America, and some of the Southern English stock that was the founding stock of New England, for example. And this, it's funny, you know, like William Faulkner said, he said, history is not... history is not dead. It's not even, or the past isn't history. The past isn't even past. We are still living out the legacy of our ancestors. We haven't resolved it yet. People need to figure out that red state America is basically the old Confederacy, but it includes the interior West. Why? Well, the interior West was settled by whom? Expatriate Confederates trying to flee the oppression of Reconstruction after the Civil War. That's who populated Texas, Kansas, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, places like that, Arizona. That's why they're red states. On the other hand, California, how did it go so far awry? Well, it had a big media influence, and it brought in a lot of people from blue state America, including the most liberal segment of them all, the Jewish population. You know, Jews would talk about flyover country. That's red state America between the East Coast and the West Coast. I remember when Jerry Lewis said that whenever he took a transcontinental air flight, he always wanted to know when he was flying over Mississippi so he could go to the bathroom. This was on the Johnny Carson show in about 1964. A lot of people in blue state America don't remember that, but I guarantee the people of Mississippi, Tennessee, and the rest of red state America are very aware of that. See, that shows the type of contempt blue state America has for red state America and just reinforces the idea that the South was right. We needed to secede and be a separate nation from that other group. And I would love it if we did, and all of the good conservative people in New York, like Peter, could come to red state America, and all of the blue state misfit mentalities in red state America, like Tennessee or Mississippi, can move up to New York. You could swap houses. We'll get some type of exchange going for that.
Scoop, hit us with another story.
Well, that's all I have from the peanut gallery. I worked long and hard, well, about a minute, to come up with that story. Other than that, I'd like to thank all the people, especially Al Gore, who told me about climate change, because it's been actually freezing down here in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, no kidding. I can't remember as many 20-degree days or colder that we've had in Memphis this winter. It normally doesn't get that cold here that often, and it's just been about every other day, right, Keith? It's been 20 degrees?
Yeah, so much for global warming, but you'll never get the Al Gores and the blue state boobs to admit that they're wrong about anything. Now it is morphed from global warming into global climate change. So if you get any type of unusual weather pattern, either too cold or too hot, all it does is prove their thesis, which shows how intellectually dishonest they all are.
Well, Scoop, my friend, my brother, thanks again for your contributions to the night show. We'll be looking forward to your segment next week as well. And, you know, it's a team effort here. We are the sum of all of our parts. So our victory is yours and yours is ours, and that extends to the audience as well. Scoop, we'll talk to you next week. For everyone else, we're going to get into the nuts and bolts of the night show now that we have shared with you that experience we had taping that show. Again, that's your victory, folks. We're going to talk about a lot of news stories in rapid fire mode here in the second hour to make up for lost time. Stay tuned. It's going to be a bumpy ride.